What's up, guys? Welcome back to Table 40. Matt and Leslie here with another episode of Table 40. Today, our guest is Chris Carpenter, one of my favorite teammates, three-time All-Star, Cy Young Award winner, world champion.
Twice.
Overcame a lot, is an awesome guy, awesome teammate, one of my favorite teammates ever. I know I say that a lot.
I feel like you do have a lot of fun teammates.
I have a lot, but when we bring people on that we like, but Carp really is at the top of that list because of how competitive he was, how tough he was, the environment he created with the Cardinals. First thing I noticed when I got over there is how accountable he held all the starting pitchers and all the pitchers in general. So, Carp, we're glad to have you on. We've been talking about playoff baseball. I have a lot of other things I want to talk to you about, so we can get into a little playoff baseball later if we run out of things to talk about. But thanks for coming on.
No, I appreciate it. I'm excited to be here. Chat with you guys for a little bit.
All right, Chris. So you grew up in New Hampshire, and you loved hockey more than baseball. Is that right?
That is right. Yeah, I started playing hockey when I was like 8 years old. I still love it. I love the sport. I love watching that sport. It was a lot of fun. I mean, if you didn't play hockey up there, you didn't do anything. We'd go out and skate on ponds in the winter when they were frozen. We'd find games to play. I mean, I actually used to skate in my driveway. My parents' driveway would flood, and I'd take my skates out and skate around that too. So I really enjoyed playing hockey. I loved the physical part of it. It was just a lot of fun.
That's great. Well, how excited were you that the Blues won? Wasn't that fun?
So fun. I was so happy for them. I got to know a lot of those guys. And I was actually in Aruba with Sam and Ava. And I was like wearing the T-shirts and taking pictures, and it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
I know.
Okay, so in New Hampshire, you have to, you know, obviously it's cold most of the year, and so did you always good at baseball, or how did baseball kind of come into the picture? And as you journeyed into kind of your career, tell us a little bit about like your baseball, kind of how that happened.
Yeah, I mean, I started playing when I was young, like most little league and that thing. And yeah, I was always big, and I could always throw the ball real well. So everybody wanted me to play. And I had an older brother that I would play with all the time with his friends. So I was always playing like up levels, 3 years older than me with older guys. And I just started playing, and I was always good at it. Always enjoyed it. Baseball and hockey were my two favorite sports. And as I continued to play throughout my life, that I really just ended up having almost that chosen for me. Baseball was chosen for me because of how well I could throw the baseball.
Yeah, that's fun. We had James Laurinaitis on here a couple weeks ago, and he had the same problem, like being such a gifted athlete in so many sports, and then
hockey didn't work out,
so he played football and did that really well. So that's fun. Okay, so you're drafted by the Blue Jays, right?
Yep. Yeah,
talk to us about that.
The Blue Jays. Oh man, I can explain the day. I guess the day was so fun. I actually had a playoff game that night that I was pitching in for our state, not championship, but one of the like quarterfinals or something. And my dad stayed home from work because back then, you know, we didn't have cell phones and text messages and all the other stuff, so they had to call my parents' home phone number. So I had school, I had finals, and then I had to stay because I went to school about 20 minutes away from my home. I had to stay up there to get ready for the baseball game. So my dad stayed home from work waiting for the phone call, and he got the phone call, and I remember him calling. He actually called my girlfriend's house to where I was hanging out waiting to go to the baseball game to tell me what happened. And, man, it was just such an amazing day. And ultimately, I got in my car, and I ended up driving home real fast so I could go give my dad a hug.
That's awesome.
And then had to turn around and drive back to go to the game. And I remember pulling into the driveway, and like I was like going numb, like my face was going, like I was so excited, and I to see my dad and give him a hug and tell him how excited I was, and him hug me. It was an amazing day, and I had to go pitch that night.
How'd you do?
Good.
Yeah,
per usual. I mean, yeah. Playoff game, Carp's pitching. I'm guessing he did good.
Like, yeah, New Hampshire. New Hampshire high school baseball back in 1993 wasn't the greatest, nor that it is now either. But
so tell me this. So playing hockey, do you think that had a lot to do with like your toughness and your mentality? And I tell people all the time, you were one of the, or if probably the toughest guy I ever played with as far as mental toughness and hard work and overcoming adversity and just a bulldog on the mound. Do you think that hockey had a lot to do with that, or would you say that was more like your upbringing?
I think, to be honest with you, a little bit of all of it. I think hockey was part of it. I loved the commitment, the physical commitment that it took. I think my upbringing with the way my parents raised me, but also having an older brother, like I said, if I wanted to play and I wanted to be a part of the action, I had to be tough to play with my brother and his buddies that were 3 years older than me. And then I also think that, you know, Matt, over time with all the injuries and the adversity early in my career, I think I just learned how to continually work mentally, to get tougher, to get better out of through trouble and through adversity and things like that. And I think that was a lot to do with it too.
Let's get into that a little bit. Let's talk about it. So you get drafted by the Blue Jays, you go into the minor leagues, and then what did that look like? How quickly did you face arm injuries and some adversity?
Well, adversity pretty quickly. Like I said a minute ago, coming from New Hampshire, playing high school baseball, I mean, we played 16 games a year, and part of them were, in snow and ice. It wasn't like we were like super rock solid in baseball, you know? So when I showed up to the minor leagues, I'll never forget, I showed up to instructional ball that following fall that I got drafted, and that was my first introduction to professional baseball. And they got all the screens up in the batting cages, and guys are hitting fungos and infields, and all these other things are going on. And we had to take PFP, and I didn't even know what PFP was. I was like, what is PFP? I had never covered first base. I'd never tried to turn a double play. I'd never done a bunt play. All I did was sit on the mound and throw it and hit it and those things. So there was a lot that was brought to me real quickly of what baseball really was and what it looked like. And then they moved me pretty quickly. And to be honest, again, the first few years was pretty easy just because of my stuff. And then I got to that double A level and the Braves team. And they had Wes Helms and Andrew Jones and Jermaine Dye. And I'll never forget my first like 4 or 5 starts in Double A. I didn't get out of the fourth inning. And I remember sitting in our locker room, which was an old trailer in Knoxville. And I remember crying after one of my games, being like, I couldn't get anybody out. And I was like, what am I doing? Am I going to make it? I knew deep down inside that I was good enough, but man, was I struggling. And I ultimately ended up figuring out Mel Queen was a guy that really helped me in my days in the minor leagues and really gave me some confidence and helped me understand the game. And and that time I moved forward and continued to get better. But physically, I got called up in 1997. I played a little over half a year in 97, and then by the end of 98, that was my first elbow injury where I had to have surgery. And then from that point on, I ended up having 7 surgeries on my arm, and it was always an up and down roller coaster of injury with me, but thank the Lord I was able to continue to play and make it.
All right, Chris, so one of your teammates, I mean, this is well documented, but one of your teammates was Roy Halladay, and you guys met in the minor leagues. Talk to us a little bit about that relationship as young Roy and young Chris.
Yeah, so I met Doc early on. He was drafted a couple of years later than I was. When I got called up to the big leagues in 97, he came up and took my place in AAA. And then I got sent back down after about 2 weeks up there. So that's when we first really became teammates and really got to – we just hit it off. We're very similar people. We weren't very social. We were kind of awkward. We liked to compete and we liked to work, but we were very loners to ourselves. So we hit it off that way. And just enjoyed pushing one another and learning from one another. So that's where it started. And then we became friends through that journey for the first few years in Toronto. Went through a lot of ups and downs together, a lot of struggles together, a lot of learning curves together. There was a lot of pressure on us. As we were coming up, we were pitching behind Roger Clemens and Pat Hankin and Juan Guzman and these guys. And back then, you had the mighty Red Sox and the mighty Yankees of the AL East. And they were, you know, a lot of people were expecting me and Doc to be the next guys that were going to shut them down. And man, you know, I shared all the time, and I've shared before that, you know, we were just trying to figure out what it looked like to be professional baseball players. Figure out what it looked like to be Major League Baseball players. We just wanted the cool pants and the cool belt, and we got neat shoes and, you know, those sorts of things. And we were just trying to figure that out. Never mind trying to get out, you know, Derek Jeter and Bernie Williams and Jorge Posada and all the other guys. So we went through a lot together, and it was neat to watch him grow just as I grew. He went through a few different struggles than I did, but mine was more injury-related. His was more personal and mental related, and he battled his butt off to get back to where he was, just as I did, and we fed off each other a lot.
That's wonderful. He's a great guy.
What do you think, you know, when you talk about injuries, and you talk about talking to a young athlete who's going through adversity, or just kind of a young athlete about mental toughness, like what would you say you learned, and what was the key to overcoming injury, bad performance, just kind of going from trying to figure out how to be a major league player to winning a Cy Young? What do you think the biggest, I guess, learning keys were?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest one for me, I think, was I couldn't sit in it. And I think that's anything in life. You know, you're going to face adversity, and anything that you do, no matter if you're a parent, a husband, a wife, a father, a son, whatever it is, or as a player. And when my first major surgery was my shoulder surgery before I came over to the Cardinals. And that's where I really, like I said, started learning. I was opening day starter at Fenway Park, the place that I went to as a child watching guys play, the Red Sox play against Pedro Martinez. I had 35 people there. Watching me pitch. It was my first opening day. I was making a few million dollars, and back then, that was a lot of money for us. And I went from pitching opening day against Pedro to, by September, I was released and had shoulder surgery with my first son on the way, like all kinds of life-changing things. And I took a lot of things for granted. And, when baseball got taken from me with that surgery, I was like, man, I don't know if I'll ever get this job back again. My priorities changed, and it wasn't, I realized that baseball wasn't the most important thing. Now it was my family and my soon to be son. And allow my athletic ability to take over. I stopped worrying about all the big things, the money and all that other stuff that comes along with it. I just wanted to go play and enjoy what I was doing. But what I learned from that surgery was, you know, I could sit in that surgery and sit in that situation and be the woe is me, be sad, get depressed, do all those things. Or I could get better. And I chose to get better. I gave myself an opportunity to sit and be sad and pout, but after that, I needed to get better. And I found every way I could to get better physically, mentally. Each and every time I ended up having surgery, that's what I did. And that's what I continue to reiterate to young kids today is you can sit in it, give yourself an opportunity, but you either can choose to get better or you can choose to sit in it and wallow in it. Yeah, you have one or the other, and I would recommend choosing to get better.
That's good, Chris. Okay, so we met you when you were in that state, like the choosing to get better, Chris. That's when the holidays entered the picture, and that's when our relationship existed in that time frame. And so one thing I remembered about you, and the one thing I thought, oh, Matt and him are going to be great friends, is that your work ethic and the way that you trained, you took that very seriously. So if you were to talk to a younger athlete, talk about some of the practical things that you did as a pitcher and some of the training things that you did that you recommend.
Yeah. I was always open to change. I think that that was a big thing, and that is I always wanted to learn and like and learn new things. So I wasn't always stuck on like I could only work out one certain way, or I could only run this, or I could only do this. I was always willing to learn, no matter if it was from somebody that was older than me or somebody that was younger than me. I was always trying to figure out a new way to get better. And so I went through multiple different workout programs, throwing programs, and all those things to try to find ways that work for me. And ultimately, you use it all, and you put it all together to try to find out what's best for you. And I did that. Sometimes it's a little later than you wished, but I think as any athlete, you're always striving to find the new thing that might make you a little stronger or might make you a little faster. And I always try to do that. One thing, though, I always stuck with was I was a runner. I didn't like it, but I always ran long distance the day after I pitched. And a lot of people along the way told me that it probably wasn't good for me because it beats up your knees and your back and all those other things. But physically, mentally, it allowed me to go and clear my head, no matter if it was good or bad to start before the night before. It allowed me to just go get clean and clear and clear my mind and start over again. So that was something that I always stuck with. And I always wanted to do, or always did, was I always was a runner, and I really enjoyed that. People don't do it as much anymore, but I think mentally it was better than it was for me physically.
Do you still run?
I do.
Same,
and when I stay consistent doing it, I'm telling you, I always feel better. It doesn't matter if I'm running a mile and a half or 5 miles. When I stay consistent, you always, my mind feels better. I'm a good thinker. I wrote my wedding vows running.
I know. I'm the same. I love it. But what shoes do you wear? Matt may want to know.
No, I don't care.
I just started using those On Cloud running shoes.
Oh, yeah. Those are great.
They're super nice. Yeah, I saw a pair on. I was like, I'm going to try these.
Yeah, so. I was wearing Hokas for a while, but I got Hoka shamed, and so I'm back to the Nikes. So anyway, that's neither here nor there. But I love to run as well. I think that's great.
Okay, let's fast forward a little bit. You had an amazing career, accomplished pretty much anything a player could want to accomplish. So you have thoracic outlet, and pretty much you couldn't feel the ball anymore. Is that right? So you know that the end is near when you can't command the ball because you don't have the feeling in your fingertips. And I guess people listening to this may not know what thoracic outlet is, but basically your rib was in the way, right? Or you can probably explain a lot better than I can. So, but just talk about kind of the end of your career and figuring out, okay, so I've got this thoracic outlet, no feeling in my fingers, and how the emotions of knowing that you're kind of winding down and that you can't do what you want to do.
Yeah. So it happened fast. You know, 2011 was just an amazing year, as you know, and I was able to pitch a lot and do a lot, and we win the World Series, and I get ready for spring training the next year, and I go out and I'm starting to throw, and all of a sudden, I can't feel the ball, I can't feel my arm, I can't feel my hand, it turned into just the mental grind that I've been going through over the years of injury. Got to the point where I really struggled dealing with it. And you know, at 38 years old, at some point in time, right, it's going to end. But man, did it happen fast. You just come off that big high the year before to, oh my word, what is going on? And then, again, it starts getting taken from you. And I wasn't prepared for it. Some people are. I wasn't prepared for it. You know, I think I've shared with you guys before. They teach you in our game, you know, to prepare yourself financially and all those other things for the end of your career so that, because you have so much time, but I wasn't prepared for not doing what I have been doing for the last 22 years. You know, I mean, I was a professional player for 20 years since the time I was 18 years old. And that was my life. I knew where I was going to be every single year. I knew where, you know, even the year before that by All-Star break, right? They come out with the schedule of spring training and all those other things. Everything's planned for you. And I just happened fast, and I struggled with it. But again, you deal with it, and you try to move forward with it. And unfortunately, I couldn't get back from that thoracic outlet syndrome that I had. I ended up calling it quits in 2013, but it definitely was, again, an interesting but struggle for me.
All right, Chris. So we know part of your story is your faith became real important to you after you quit playing. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely, yep.
So talk to us about that. Talk to us about what that looked like for you when you started to become a follower of Christ.
Well, I grew up in a Christian home, grew up going to church, and then became, like I said, from high school on, turning into a professional baseball player, and I lost my way, I guess is the easiest way to explain it. As you start moving forward and those things, the money and the fame and the other stuff starts coming, I just lost kind of who I was and where I was going. But as I started moving towards that at the end of my career, like we were just talking about, I mean, it was just an emotional downfall. I don't know. I mean, just like I was just falling in a hole. And, I had multiple people around me. And again, I've shared this with you guys before, but I've had multiple people around me that continued to remind me, and you guys were one of them, that there was something better than just baseball, than what was really going on in my life. There was something better out there. And I always wondered what it was. I would see you, or I'd see Wayno or Lance Berkman or these people that were put into my life. And I was just like, man, they've got something different than what I have. And I want that. And ultimately, Wayno, who was pouring into me consistently, invited me down to his golf tournament down in Georgia, and had an amazing time down there, and got myself into some situations that I shouldn't have been in, and I literally asked the Lord to save me in that moment, and asked him if he came and helped me and started to guide me, I would listen, I would change my life, and I would give everything I had towards him. And that's where it started. It's been going ongoing since then. That was, 2013, I think, the winter of 2013. It's a continuing journey that I've really enjoyed. At first it was like, oh, I'm saved, and I have this huge, like, overwhelming excitement and energy. But what I've learned over time is every day is a new day, and every day is a new journey, and every day is a new piece to that journey. It's not just, hey, you're saved and you're a follower of Christ and now you just go do your thing. It's like, man, he continues to remind me each and every day and put people in my life each and every day that remind me that he's there. And it's been an amazing journey. He's brought people like yourselves in my life that I thank him for all the time. And I get excited about what's next. Instead of trying to figure it out or worried about it, I'm excited about it. So it's been a lot of fun.
That's amazing. I love that. You could have written Psalm 40. So I don't know if you know this, but Table 40, the podcast, like, my favorite passage of scripture is Psalm 40. And it's actually a lot like your story. And so David writes it, and he says, like, where I pulled you out of the pit of destruction and set you on a firm foundation and then gave you a new song to sing. And I see that, like, there's that prayer of desperation, like, man, Lord, I need you, like, ASAP, right now. And God was faithful to rescue you from that situation that you were in and put you on a firm foundation. And then right now, a couple years later, it's pretty obvious that he's given you this new song to sing that you can share the gospel with other people and share your story and your life. And it's really cool to see that, because what's fun about having friends that we've journeyed with for a really long time, is it's like seeing somebody's kids that you haven't seen in a long time, and they're like, they grow up so much, and you're like, what happened? And it's really cool to see, because we were with you when you very first started this journey with the Lord, and like to see you now, it's really neat, and you just seem so at peace. So it's really fun for me.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that, and it's a lot of fun, and what you say is true. Like, you know, like I, and again, I thank him all the time. It's like I was rescued, and then he continues to each day. Although, you know, it's not like, as you know, every day is perfect. It's not like you wake up and it's like, yeah, this is the greatest day ever, and it's like everything's sunshine and rainbows. There's days that you're still working through and still struggling through, but to know that you have wonderful people that God has put in your life. I was just talking with my wife's dad the other day, and it's like you can still see it. I just came down here to Texas, and all of a sudden, within the first couple of weeks, he put somebody else in my life. And it's a 60-year-old man that is a follower that is just super cool and really nice. And now I played golf with him a few times, and you just see these people. He put my wife, who I just got married a couple of weeks ago, and she was a big believer in Jesus and a follower in her family. I mean, she just pours into me, and it's just the whole deal. It's like nonstop each and every day you see these things that are really neat.
Yeah, and I think you are bringing up a good point that needs to be highlighted, is that Christianity it's not this pursuit of perfection. It's just being just a little more consistent all the time and moving towards becoming like Christ. And it is an imperfect journey, but it's not about being perfect. And I think that that's so true. I'm glad you brought that up.
One of the things I shared, and I think I told you I wrote my vows running. Well, one of the vows was, and I don't know, Matt, you might have heard Tony say this, but I used a piece of something Tony told me early on. I can't remember if you were with our fall club yet or not, but Tony La Russa shared something with me one time. He actually shared with the club, and it was that nobody's perfect, right? He doesn't expect anybody in that clubhouse to be perfect, but he does expect people to try perfect.
That's good.
And that's exactly right. Right. I can't wake up and be the perfect husband every single day. And I can't wake up and be the perfect dad every day, but I can wake up and ask myself to try perfectly. And, that's something I share with Carrie, is that I'm going to wake up every day and try perfectly. I might not be perfect, but I can try. And, I think that's an important part in anybody, is that you can try perfect, but we know that perfection is not possible.
Yeah, that's good.
So let's talk about current Chris Carpenter. You have a son who's a senior in high school and a daughter who's a freshman. So the kids are getting older. You've been doing some work with the Cardinals, kind of here and there. And then, so what is current Chris Carpenter up to? And what are you excited about in the future as far as, you know, what you're up to? We talked a little bit about this before we came on, but give everybody an update on what you're up to and kind of the kids and what you're doing.
Yeah. So, I mean, like you said, I have, in the last 3 years, I've been doing some stuff with the Cardinals, working with guys there. I really have enjoyed that. I've enjoyed watching some of these young kids grow and get to the big leagues and then be successful. I've been pouring into my kids. I just recently got married, and my wife has a 4-year-old daughter. That's been a lot of fun, and going back into that direction and really pouring and having fun with her and playing Barbies and doing things like that is just watching. I mean, the innocence, you know, we're at the park the other day, and she's like, man, if I could just go back and be 4 again, let somebody push me in the swing and give me goldfish and grab an ice cream on the way home. How sweet would that be, you know? So that's been a lot of fun. So, you know, I've just really been, trying to figure out, you know, really what I'm supposed to be doing. But I do know one thing, what I'm supposed to be doing is being a great husband and a great dad, and investing in them. And then, trying to, like we said earlier, wake up every day and be the best follower of Christ I can be too. But, have a specific thing that I'm doing. And that's about it.
You can drive 4 hours north and come up here and help me coach hitting and maybe show the pitchers a little bit of cutter or a little bit of sinker as far as. So we've got
that'd
a spot
a
for
fun.
You. Every now and then you need to come up and get a little baseball fix.
Yeah, that'd be a lot of fun.
Okay, well, I feel like I've been chasing rabbits a little bit in this conversation, but I'm going backwards on you, Chris, for a second.
Okay.
And so another thing that Matt said that he loved when he would talk behind your back when he'd come home from work is like he was so amazed at, and he sort of touched on it earlier, about how you would make all the guys kind of watch each other's bullpens and things like that. And so explain that a little bit more, because that's...
Well, the most impressive thing I noticed the first time when I got traded to the Cardinals was that all the starting pitchers would sit right by the bat rack and they would root for their teammates. And in my experience, and even after I left, most of the starting pitchers are either getting treatment or they're eating or they're just really kind of in and out of the dugout. But what I noticed was because of your leadership, and I think that you would probably say that some of the people that you were with, that you guys stayed in the dugouts, you watched each other's bullpens, you created this kind of accountability that I immediately noticed the first day I got there. So your question is?
My question is where did that come from? And just like, why were you so passionate about that? Because I think that's really interesting and we forgot to talk about it. And I think it's real important to talk about because leadership and one of the things that both of us had always admired about you as a friend and a teammate is like you have incredible leadership skills. And so that was like leadership in action, right? So sort of talk about that a little bit because I think it would be sad if we didn't.
Well, I mean, it started when I got over there with me and Woody Williams and Matt Morris. And it was that, you know, we were a little team inside a team and that it wasn't you against me or me against you. If you were successful and you could help me be more successful. If I was successful, I could help you be more successful. If I was watching you, I mean, I knew a little bit about pitching. Woody knew a little bit about pitching. Like if I could watch you, it's like an extra set of eyes, right? So now we have another pitching coach instead of just Dave Duncan and Marty Mason. You have Chris Carpenter and Woody Williams and Matt Morris and Mark Mulder and Jason Marquis and Jeff Supon and all the people that started coming into our organization. How can you not learn from these people? Right. If you want to listen and learn, you can learn from something like I was saying earlier from anyone, no matter if they're 20 years old or 50 years old, if you paid attention. Right. So my biggest thing was the way that you learn and the way that I learned was just pay attention to what's going on around you. If you pay attention, you can learn something. Mm-hmm. And, so we just started talking about that and started really pulling for one another and turning our little starting staff into a team within a team, holding each other accountable. And again, it's really like in anything, right? A true friend's going to tell you the truth, without any judgment. And that's what we did. We were like, hey, if they were sliding the wrong way, hey, you need to get back and get back involved in your teammates. If you weren't working hard enough, you know, we need to make sure you get back in the weight room and get your work in. If you weren't focused enough in your bullpen, hey, get focused to what you're doing. We only had to have a short little amount of time to get our work done. And I was going to hold you accountable for it. Again, you're not going to be perfect, but I'm going to hold you accountable for it. And we did a great job at that. And I still do that. I enjoy holding people accountable for what they say. And what they're supposed to be doing, because that's the only way you're going to get better is, don't speak it, not do it. Do what you say. And, it started there and it continued to move on for a long period of time. And I think, you know, as you guys saw and Matt in the clubhouse, it's like it can go anywhere. When you walk into that clubhouse, when we were there, there was expectations, to be successful or at least give effort. And that was because we had position players like Matt that held people accountable, and you had pitchers like myself and Adam Wainwright and other players that held people accountable. And when you do that, again, with no judgment, you can have a lot of success because you get a lot of people pulling in the same direction instead of against one another.
That's good. I love that. I'm so glad I asked that
question.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks. I thought we were going to miss it, but anyway.
Well, that Carp, we really appreciate you coming on. We want to have you and your wife on. We're going to have a parenting and a relationship
series
coming up, but we'll have you guys back on. But
That'd be great.
Really appreciate you coming on.
Thanks, Chris, for coming on.
All right, Chris, we appreciate it. It's great to see
you. No, I appreciate you guys. Thanks again for everything that you guys do. You guys are special, because you know that.
Thank you for listening to Table 40 with Matt and Leslie Holiday, part of the Sports Spectrum Podcast Network. For more stories on sports intersecting with faith, check out sportsspectrum.com.